everything you see exists together in a delicate balance. While others search for what they can take, a true king searches for what he can give.
Welcome to another edition of the Subbeacon, sponsored by DoorDash. I'm Victor Manis, along with Sonny Bunch and Jonathan V. Last. I'd like to remind you the Subbeacon is available on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher. Just look under podcasts, search for Subbeacon, you'll easily find us. Please subscribe, tell your friends, and leave a review. Gentlemen, how are we? Sonny, what's going on?
Not a whole lot. I got a haircut. JVO maintained my haircut. Yeah, two haircuts in 6 weeks, which is like...
That's bizarre.
That is a... It's very... Usually, I'm the sort of person who... It's funny. I was reading like 10 years ago, I was reading an Esquire
magazine. Every 2 weeks.
And it, and Esquire was like, at a certain point, at a certain age, you achieve certain like life goals. These are things that... So like... One of them was, you know, like by the age of 25, have a custom fitted suit or something. Like, okay, guys, we're not all, you know, Hollywood.
What was, sorry, what was that hand motion?
Yeah, making a jerk off motion over.
I didn't get my first custom suit until I was like 35.
Yeah, exactly. I still don't have mine. So, but
you
the,
mean like from Brooks Brothers or like a tailored thing?
No, for my tailor.
Yeah. Oh, I'm not rich like you. I don't have that. Sorry, continue, Sonny.
But one of them was like by age 30, get a haircut pick a haircut style and get your haircut every 2 weeks or 3 weeks or something like that. So it always looks the same. And I've never subscribed to that notion at all. I basically get it cut kind of short and then let it grow
for months.
Long.
Really long.
For months.
What like, is your longest interval been?
Well, it was probably after my hairdresser died. Mm-hmm. I went like 6 or 7 months.
You look like
it was long.
You know,
yeah,
it was long.
You look like Eric Carmen from Hungry Eyes.
Yeah.
You ever see that?
I don't know what that means. Large, I don't understand that.
Mane, like Richard Barks.
I don't understand that.
Like really Richard floppy. Barks, a large mane.
Yeah. So, you know, twice in 6 weeks, big change for me. Big change.
What sort of product are you putting in? Because you got a sort of wave action going on at the front.
It's American Crew.
Oh, American,
of course.
American Crew. Is it the paste?
It's the blue. It's the blue top. I don't know what it is actually, but it's the American Crew with the blue. I don't know.
It's not gloss. It's clearly a matte.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what it's definitely
for
a
years,
matte.
For years, I refuse. Kate was always correcting me because I always referred to any hair product as mousse. But it hasn't been mousse since 1986.
All right, Zach Morris.
Sorry. Yes, mousse. Okay. Well, good for you, Sonny.
Yeah. Anyway, that's what's going on in my world. Haircut.
I was always jealous. You always hear about like, you know, like, well, not the current president probably, but the, you know, president's general, you get like a hair, they get haircuts whenever they want. And it maybe every week. That they're, I mean, it's never off.
Never.
You know, it's just always right. There's not, I mean, it's just always right.
If you were
jealous about
if you
that.
Were
sounds
like
amazing.
A,
that sounds amazing.
If you were a hairdresser / barber for the president, mm-hmm. and you had to keep it at a certain level, a certain very precise, you know, always mm-hmm. the same. Would you ever, do you think you're ever like struck by the urge to do a little bit too much? You know how like when you're an editor, right? And you're given a piece, and you're like, I gotta find something to edit here. I have to like tweak something. Is that what the hairdresser is like? Is that
like
what the barber is thinking? Like, I gotta cut something here.
It's like trimming a bonsai tree,
just a little bit,
right? Just a little. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, if that's what you call it, JVL, what's going on with you?
It was a big weekend. I'm very tired. I'm so tired that I am drinking Keurig coffee. I believe this is the
Keurig.
Special. The special bacteria blend.
Oh, yeah. Well, we clean it about once a year. No, actually, we don't.
I'm so tired that when
Love
I went over
bacteria.
To your office, Keurig, mm-hmm. I opened it and there was another used pod just sitting there, just cooking.
Probably.
Oh, it was cooking. That's right.
That was probably mine.
And I'm so desperate for caffeine mm-hmm. that I was just like, okay.
No,
pulled it out, tossed
question.
It, popped a new one in.
Question.
That was Father Harrison's.
Question.
Go ahead.
What is the preferred Keurig etiquette? Is it to take out the pod that you have just brewed?
Yes.
Or is it to leave it in and let the next person
take it out? No. I learned this from JVL.
No. Here's my point. My point is that it's not like you have, it's not like the Keurig has any sort of your leavings on it. It's just a thing in a, in a pod that has water run through it, right?
It's not like a public restroom after you dropped a massive deuce.
No, that's not the same thing. That's not the same thing.
Should you flush it?
That's not the same thing.
Or should you leave
not,
it?
Not at all the same thing. Either way, somebody is taking a pod out of the thing. I think leaving it there is the correct thing to do because it will cool down by the time the next person comes. No. You don't burn your fingers when you take it out.
You don't burn your fingers when you take it out.
It's too hot. It's too hot.
Maybe
the
for you.
Edges. It's too hot.
You take the edges. Yeah. The reason you take it out, right? Yeah. So do you know what makes coffee? Do you know what it is that turns the water from water into
coffee grounds.
Right. But it is the oils from the coffee grounds mixing with the heat and the water. The heat extracts the oils from the grinds.
Sure.
Right?
Right.
Heat and oils gather together to make an amazing substrate for bacteria.
Okay.
And so if you leave the oil reservoir that is the K-cup
the moisture
keeps heating and heating and heating.
It doesn't keep heating. It stopped heating.
But it's all warm. And so what you want to do is remove the substrate so that it is at least nominally clean.
But it's not clean and hygienic, is the thing.
It allows us to pretend.
A public toilet
isn't clean and hygienic either.
It's not clean.
But if somebody flushed, at least you can tell yourself, it's okay.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I still don't think this is a very good analogy.
I think it's the perfect analogy.
It's not a good analogy at all.
I'm doing fine. I have two things. One.
Do I get nothing for the brown trout?
I do.
Nothing?
No, I thought that
do that just for you.
I'm probably going to take that out. I'm going to delete it.
The loaf. Okay. I'm doing fine. I have two things. Really quickly. People are asking me for one reason or another about gout and Gout Watch and how things were going. After the weekend, I was drinking a lot, but particularly just to be social because I didn't want to drink a lot of alcohol, I was drinking beer.
Were you drinking a lot at my house?
No. By then I was good. Prior to that, I was at my in-laws, and of course there was beer there, but it was Michelob Ultra, so I don't think that really counts, but nevertheless.
It's basically water.
Is that beer?
Nevertheless.
Well, it's got electrolytes.
To our friends who listen from Anheuser-Busch, it's definitely beer. But it's got the beer elements, the yeasty elements. So sure enough, the twinge came back.
Oh.
The twinge. Not full on. I said, oh, no, I got to start drinking water and maybe I don't know what. And I said, do I take some pain relievers or allopurinol, whatever? And somebody,
find some cherry juice?
Somebody asked on Twitter, how's the gout? And you know what it was? It was a listener named the Frank Fryer, who is a Carmelite brother. And I said to him, pray for me because it's back. And you know what? It went away that night. Like a miracle. I think if the Frank Fryer is listening, that's one miracle, two more to go.
Yeah.
That's it. That's all you need. And it counts.
Start investigating.
Okay. The second thing is, so the kids are back and the wife is back. Everything's back. But I wanted to, again, thank Timothy Lewis for...
Time out with Tim Lewis.
Yes. Thank you. Yes. Axis and Allies D-Day Edition. My son and I played it.
Oh,
I need a full report. How was it?
Oh, it was so good. So first of all, let me just say this.
Who did you play as?
Excuse me. I said to my son, who do you want to be? I let you choose first. And he said, maybe I'll be. I said, the Allies? You want to be the Allies? Okay, fine. I guess you want to be the Allies. Fine, I'll do it that way. I don't want to be the Wehrmacht, but I'll take it.
You did for him.
I did for him.
For him, the things we do for our children.
There are a lot more similarities than not with the original game. The numbers are different, defends and things. You know, I mean, there's some differences, but you're still rolling the dice.
Is the map just like Dog Green Beach?
It is a close-up of northern France. So on the far west is Cherbourg, and then all the way on the far right is, you know, you don't see Calais, actually. So it's really
the
close-up of the different
what
beaches.
What units do you get?
You get infantry and artillery. The British and the Americans have howitzers. The Germans have the 88s.
Ooh, the 88s are better, right?
Yes. The Germans have the Panzers, of course, and the Americans have the Shermans. And then there are Spitfires, P-38s, the P-38s for the Americans, B-17s, bombers. The Germans have no air cover.
None.
The Luftwaffe, by then, they're all in the east, you know, so there's no cover.
Yeah.
So basically, the objective, to speed things along here, is the Allies have to be...
Don't speed things along. We can do an hour on this.
I know, really.
They have
to control three cities, Cherbourg, St. Lo, and Caen,
okay,
for an entire turn.
Okay.
An entire turn. You have the Allies have 10 turns to win.
But that's it. A 10-turn game, so this is a short game.
It is, but each turn is long.
Right.
There's movement, and there's bombardment.
An hour? Would you call it
houses.
An hour for a game?
It took us a couple days.
For one game.
But, you know, I mean, the game is on the rug, and I'm sitting there, and my back is hurting, my knees are hurting, so I got to take a break.
Who was the real hero of D-Day? Some people say it was the guys who stormed Normandy. I say it's Vic Manis.
Thank you. My son and I both made tactical errors on mine early on. I just left Ken completely open, you know, so they just swept right in.
Well, you're going to consolidate your defense.
What I was doing. And then but my other big problem was supply lines.
Oh, so logistics.
He was very smart. My son started putting air cover through, you know, in order to block me from moving, because every time you go in, they can strafe and, you know, wipe out half your units, the whole thing. So at the very end, I thought I was done for, and it came down to
research and development.
No, they don't have that, but it came down to St. Lo. So all my forces were there. We held firm, and we lasted for the 10 turns.
So you won. So it was a happy ending.
I'm not going to say that. But I will say this. It was weird playing with him because, of course, you know, you and I were about the same age. When I got into action, I was 11. And I love that game. And now he's loving the game, and I'm playing with him. And it was just very weird. But you know what they say? It's the circle of life. That's what they say.
That may be the greatest transition ever.
Sunny is unfazed.
Plus.
See, now I know why you wanted to talk about the Top Gun trailer at the end of the show.
Because you didn't want to interrupt this transition,
which makes a lot of sense, frankly. When JVL
we could talk
said,
about an after box office
when
talk,
JVL that? Said that he wanted to talk about Top Gun, you were like, let's talk about it after The Lion King. I was like, well, that's a weird place to talk about it. It's a trailer. We should talk about it before the feature. We should talk about it before the feature.
But now you know why.
But then when I suggested that, you had a look of disgust on your face that was unusual.
You ruined. It was unusual. You noticed my face?
This is what your face looked like. I was like, wow, Vic is really angry. I don't understand why he's so mad. But it's because you had this great transition.
You had this great transition that we
haven't stepped on at all.
No, amazing. In fact, I actually never played the game with my son. I made the whole up just for the transition. I didn't even have a son. Okay, over the weekend, The Lion King was king of the box office, taking the top spot with $185 million, followed by Spider-Man Far From Home with $21 million, and in third place, Toy Story 4 with $14.6 million. Box office thoughts, Avengers.
Are those numbers down? Revised down?
Are they lower?
No, are they revised down? Because I had seen 192.
The final weekend figure for The Lion King was 191.7.
Oof.
Oh, okay.
That was the actual. What did you say?
185.
Vic, you realize that, once again, we're taping this on Wednesday. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm pulling the curtain back a little bit here. We're taping this on Wednesday.
When you put together the box office figures
and you use the numbers, yeah. the estimates, mm-hmm. those are often changed slightly one way or the other.
A couple days.
The 185 figure that Disney gave was a low ball, so they could revise it upwards when the actuals mm-hmm. came in. Mm-hmm. Most of the other studios were saying 192. When we're talking about the box office figures, and it's mm-hmm. not Monday, mm-hmm. and we're not mm-hmm. taping this on a Monday. You can use better data.
Once I prepare the script, I don't change it.
You gotta lock it down. You put it in a vault.
I put it in a vault. And number two, I mean, I don't really care, but you're clearly more into movies. So you should just get a job in the movies.
Do you write
your script on red paper so that nobody can make photocopies of it once it's in the safe?
Yeah, that's right. So then we could use it. Absolutely. No, okay. So but box office thoughts, the Avengers, yeah. It happened.
Who was closest?
It happened.
Who was closest to the pin?
I don't know. Who was?
What? You said it?
This guy. I believe I said 192 or 195.
I think you said 195. But you went over, so you lose.
I guess that's true. So Vic wins.
Vic wins with his zero. $1.
I said
$1.
60. I think I said 60 million. Okay.
I think I said, 200? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, point is, it made a ton of money.
It made so much money.
Avengers. Endgame.
It happened. It's done. It's over.
It's passed. It's Avatar. It's now the best movie of all time.
Yeah.
Avengers Endgame is now officially the greatest film
that
was ever made.
By the Bunch Theorem.
Yes. Well, mm-hmm. that mostly only applies to restaurants. But
It only applies to Subway, but the Subway's cutting back, so you know what that means.
Yeah, it's not as good. Oh, people realize
I sent you the
good.
Picture of the Poke Bar, Sonny. Mm. The Poke Bowl, you saw that. They're running out of stuff.
Wait. So I wasn't 100% sure
what
was going
on. They were out of salmon.
Oh, boy.
They were out of brown rice.
I have to say, I'm not 100% sure that is a
salmon. You're not sure if it was
a winning business model there with like the fish that's just sitting out and sometimes.
The Bourdain rule. I'm not going to the Poke Bowl on Monday.
Yeah.
And I heard the manager speaking very loudly to clearly a supplier or something, and it was a lot of tension.
Yeah.
And you know what? I
bet that guy yells really well. The manager, who very nice guy. When I was working in Roslyn, I would go to the Poke Bowl a couple times a week. He looks very much like somebody in the Jersey Shore who would like just start yelling
yes,
at you.
Yes.
If you crossed him. So
yeah,
I feel bad for that supplier.
I was actually I was kind of annoyed by, I don't know, either the fact that they had no salmon or that I thought I should have gotten more in my bowl. They had a thing where they said, okay,
why not both?
If you get medium, you get a free one mochi ice cream thing. I took two.
So you stole.
I think things are even now.
You stole.
I'm just saying they charge more than they should, so we're even.
So you stole.
Vigilante justice.
You were offered one and you took two.
The other day at
That's
Sweet,
stealing.
The other day at Sweet Green, just yesterday.
Well, it's a good thing there's a priest here in the office. You can confess.
It's not a sin. It's not a sin. I'm just making
stealing,
things
wrong in the Ten Commandments anywhere.
They've been stealing, Sonny. They've been stealing from me and just putting up fake numbers there for the price. It's not the price. At Sweet Green, I got the salad with extra chicken, and the lady says to me, okay, but it costs extra for the extra chicken. I said, that's fine. She forgot to tell the cashier I got it for the regular price.
That's stealing.
And you didn't tell them, no, there's extra chicken?
Because I'm not paying $14 for a salad. I'm incensed. I said, no. I said, we're even now.
Well, then why did you pay $14
for it? That's true. Yeah, but I didn't.
But you didn't. So you stole.
Mm-mm.
You
they charge too much as it is.
Question. It's a mistake in
their favor.
They charge too much as it is. They're stealing from me.
Question.
It's a ripoff.
In your career as a eater of food, how much would you say you've stolen from restaurants over the years?
I don't even know what that question means.
Okay.
It's just the skin.
I know what that question means. You want to talk about the Top Gun trailer? You want to talk about it now? Go ahead.
No, I think we should move it back. Okay.
You want to do it after the line?
Yeah, I think maybe we should do it.
Okay.
Has the show gone off the rails?
Well, yeah. I'm sort of all of a sudden Victorino is the commie who is seizing the means of production. What? These restaurateurs?
I know.
They own the food. We, the workers, own the food.
The salad thing is a racket, man. I'm just saying. The salad thing is a racket.
You could get cheaper salads. You could get cheaper
salads. Like from downstairs at the sandwich bar.
You could make your own salads and bring them in.
I could.
And bring them in. But instead, wouldn't be as good. You prefer the higher quality,
mescaline,
more filling.
Mescaline.
Micro-mescaline.
Micro-mescaline.
But then you steal. Then you steal from hardworking, small businesses.
I say we're even.
Thou shalt not thou shalt not overcharge.
Thank you,
for salad.
Thank you, JVL.
That's what it
thou
says
shalt
in
not
the Bible.
Charge
actually,
for over salad.
Look,
and if they do, try to get as much out of it.
Look,
as
it's a strange translation. It's not
the original
James.
Aramaic,
right? If you look,
we'll
at the,
have
if
to
you
ask
look,
Father later.
If you look at the Hebrew on the tablets that came down from Mount Sinai, it actually says, "Thou shalt not steal from the customers by charging them double for extra
Thank
chicken."
You.
And Bam. That has been interpreted over the years to mean "Thou shalt not steal," but really, the full text there.
Yes. It, much like the staff of Ra, it's a different measurement if you look carefully at it and flip it over. Okay. So we don't want
to. Okay. So box office. What's interesting about the box office to me is not so much that Disney continues to dominate everything in sight, but that they continue to have remarkably small drops on all of these movies. Toy Story 4 dropped only 25% in its fifth week. Aladdin again continues to hang in there, dropped only 33%. I had predicted that Aladdin would make $900 million,
and
I think it's going to get to a billion. I'm actually shocked by this.
It's because it's so good.
Yeah, something like that. And Avengers Endgame down only 28%. I mean, it's interesting.
Did any of you see because they re-released it with deleted scenes. Did you see it by any chance?
No.
Deleted scenes?
Why on earth would
that's
I
the way they say, oh, we're going to get it back in the box office. And that's how they got it back in the box office.
Re-release it with a different ending, like Clue.
Yeah. Very good. It worked. Okay, so
I was obviously not young and old enough to see Clue in theaters. Were you guys? Did you guys go see?
Well,
Clue
we
in
were
theaters?
Old enough, but I did not.
I was old enough to go, and I refused to go because it struck me as a jip.
How so? Oh, you mean the different endings to go?
Show you
even
this,
time,
the idea was you got to come and pay to see for 20 minutes.
Yeah,
because it was just the final 20 minutes were different.
It was like, you got to pay. Pre-DVD, you got to pay every time.
Did you also know which ending was going to be on which movie?
It was ending A, B, C.
Okay.
And so you would go, like, the idea was, I want to go see, I want a ticket to see the 9:30 showing of Clue ending A. And I just thought, I'm sorry, we got to sit through. I was like 8 years old at the time, I think. And even I thought,
and this is the moment that radicalized you. This is the moment that radicalized you against the system of capitalism.
The evils of capitalism.
I have a long box office digression I want to talk about.
One
I'm
more.
Sorry.
Can I make one more? Can I ask one more Clue question? So when it's not really a question, I just a statement. When I was growing up, I watched Clue on VHS and on cable. And in those versions, it's just all three endings at the end. It's just
one
like,
after another.
You get one after the other. So
and they'll go backwards.
So the whole story goes through, and it does one of the endings, and then there's a title card that says that's how it could have ended, or it could have ended like this, and then it does another one, and then it's like, but this is how it really ended, and it was the Tim Curry as the bad guy.
Yes, that was the real.
That was the real ending. The correct solution.
With the rope in the library or something.
Wow. JVL, you had deeper box office thoughts.
So I had deeper box office thoughts, but I wasn't sure if we wanted to like have them as part of the box office or we wanted to move them to The Lion King.
Yeah, whatever you want to do.
Question. Do you have
go for it.
I have a question, which is whether or not we are moving to the point where a $200 million 3-day weekend is the new $100 million 3-day weekend. Because the $100 million 3-day weekend is a reasonably new thing.
Mm-hmm.
Prior to 2004, 2005, only one movie had ever done it. And once you hit 2004, 2005, that becomes the sort of gold standard for like a really big opening. So a movie like Shrek 2 or Goblet of Fire or Revenge of the Sith, things that are just going to be really monster movies, they open to like just over $100 million. And that became the status quo for like 14, 15 years until we get to 2017, 2018, when all of a sudden really big movies like Infinity War or Jurassic World or Black Panther are doing over $200 million. And I wonder if that is now just where we are. And there would be structural reasons for why this is. So this is, I went back and looked at this. It is not screen count.
Mm-hmm.
So if you go back and you look in the early days, like Shrek 2, Shrek 2 is doing, what is it? I have it here somewhere. Something like $108 million on 4,100 screens.
Mm-hmm.
The new movies are doing $200 million on somewhere between 4,000 and 4,500 screens. They're not. It's all because of the IMAX and the 3D, and then because of viewing habits. So it is both an advertising thing where they are moving, they are literally moving more people into opening weekend, and then the 50% premium that they get to charge on IMAX 3D, because that's what it is. It is your IMAX, your normal movie ticket is going to be about $11, and your IMAX 3D ticket is $20.
Yes. The problem with this theory is that there are still a very small number of IMAX screens. There aren't nearly enough IMAX screens to make up the difference here.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. It's both that plus they've changed audience habits via advertising, I assume.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just trying to think if $200 million is actually the I would say a big opening is still in the like 150 to 175 range. I mean, 200 is like an extreme opening,
right?
And then you have like these are all of these are, you know, peanuts compared to Avengers Endgame, which opened to $350 million over the 3-day weekend. Like I think the number is probably not quite at $200 million yet, but yeah, I think
we're moving
we're getting
that way.
Yeah.
And that this then is a conscious decision on the part of the studios that they want to, this because as I said, because it isn't just structural factors, it is then they have decided they want to spend the money to move audience behavior to front load the movies more. Is that good long term for them or no? You spend a lot of time thinking about economics.
it is good in the sense that it makes some of these movies totally critic-proof. Like, for instance, The Lion King, which is 50% fresh and grossed $200 million in its first weekend. I would be, or 192, whatever. I would be kind of curious to see what the hold is on that. It is good business in the sense that, I guess a question is, are they trying to dangerously ape the Netflix model of capturing eyeballs over a very short period of time? But I mean, it's hard to argue. So the question is, what happens when they try to do this and they fail?
Right.
So what happens to the movies that they spend $150 million to advertise and only gross $60 or $70 million on their opening weekend? Which I think happens more frequently than getting to $190 million or $200
million. And it is within our lifetimes, in fact, within our adult lifetimes, that a $60 million opening was enormous.
Yes.
When Vic and I were 22, if a movie opened to $60 million,
that was big. That was big.
That was a very big movie, and now it's a failure.
Well, this is, I mean, this...
At a certain level.
This is kind of part and parcel with a thing that we've been seeing for the last few years, which is a total stratification of the big blockbusters, right? You have the movies that gross between $300 and $600 million. There's like five or six of those a year. And then you have basically a ton of movies that gross under $100 million and very few that gross in the like $150 to $250 million range, you know, a handful, one or two. And I can't imagine that that's a healthy way. It's certainly not a healthy way to like build blockbusters. You don't need a movie to gross $150 million to be profitable if you make the movie cheap enough. But if everything costs, you know, $200 million to make and another $150 million to advertise, then you got to gross $700 million on a movie like that.
So like Dark Phoenix did, then.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly like Dark Phoenix.
Okay. All right. Well, maybe this is too much in the weeds. Yeah. I thought this was an interesting digression and that it's, I think, indicative of us heading to another inflection point on all this.
Where we're
heading.
Well, what's the next inflection point, then?
Where the $200 million then becomes the standard that everybody is shooting for. Uh-huh. And we judge movies as succeeding.
But are we not there? I mean, I thought your point was we are there already.
It was a question.
Yeah.
It was a question. Mm-hmm. Question. Are we there yet?
Yeah. I think we're not quite there yet, but I do think that I think $150 million is the minimum for to be considered a great opening.
Yeah. I mean, you can now gross $130 million and have it be a disappointment in your opening weekend, right? I mean, if the movie is big enough and you advertised heavy enough, $130 can be that's weird.
It is weird.
All right.
I remember thinking a $20 drink would be outrageous and ridiculous. No one ever paid $20 for a drink. But
cocktail, you mean?
Cocktail, yeah, but it's happening.
I mean, $20 soda at a movie theater. That makes sense.
That's gonna happen. I'm going to get to that in a little bit. Okay, Lion King. Did you see it, JVL?
I saw it.
Oh, good. Sonny did?
I did.
You did? That's right.
Did anyone else see it?
I saw it. Maybe somebody else saw it.
Gene!
On work release.
The Lion King is back, and the special effects are enough to give one pause. Donald Glover gives a ferocious performance as Simba. It also has Beyonce, and you know who'll want to see Beyonce, Jonathan?
Who?
Oh, all the single ladies.
It's barely even a pun.
But did we?
I love it. It kills.
But did we really need a remake compared to the original? This Lion King left me catatonic. Not really. I just wanted to say that. 4 stars.
Was it a catastrophe?
It was a catastrophe. The Lion King, however, will fill you with pride.
You missed this. You missed this, by the way.
I love it. I love the whole thing.
It's part Arch Campbell. It's part Arch Campbell.
Best gene ever.
Like that?
Best gene ever.
Okay, how about our real review, Sonny Bunch?
How do you review this movie? I don't know. Have you seen the original Lion King? Because if you've seen the original Lion King, you basically have seen this one, except this one is longer, and I'm not entirely sure where it is longer. So here's this is kind of my analogy for the Lion King. When you're an editor and you're dealing with a writer, it is always good to hear back from the writer. I don't know what you took out. Like the story.
That's the whole point.
The story reads the same to me, but it's about 20% shorter. I don't know what you took out. Sometimes I will submit a piece to an editor and they take about 20, 30% out and I don't really know what they've cut. But they haven't. So if the sign of a good editor is to take 20% or 30% and you don't know what you're missing, the sign of a bad movie is when you take the exact same movie and you add 20% or 30% to it and you have no idea what the additions are. Because that's
such
exactly
a deep thought. That
because
was
that's
so deep.
That's,
funny.
That's exactly wow. how I feel about The Lion King. The Lion. The
I gotta
original,
rewind. Everybody, rewind and listen to that again because it's so worth. Right. It's worth dwelling no, it's on.
Perfect. The original Lion King is 90 minutes long. It's tight. It's animated. It's fun. It moves from beat to beat. I like it a lot. I know JBL's not a big fan, but it's a 90 minute animated film. The new one is 120 minutes long somehow, and except for a rolling ball of giraffe poop, I literally cannot think of an added scene. There are no real additions to the movie. It's just everything plays on about 20% longer than it needs to compared to the original, which is deeply frustrating for me as an editor, but also as a film goer and a film watcher and a film reviewer. It's like, well, why is this? And it's not like, I mean, the Beauty and the Beast remake, right, was longer. The Beauty and the Beast remake was 20 or 30 minutes longer, but they added songs, and like you could see, you had a sense of what they were doing and why it was longer. You got more backstory on Belle and her family. Mm-hmm. This is just, it's just longer. It just is like, it just keeps going and the scenes don't quite end and the beats are missed and blah, blah, blah. So, you know, there's from a storytelling perspective, that is what is wrong with the movie. From a visual perspective, what is wrong with the movie is that the whole photorealism thing does not work. It looks, it's not that it looks like the Uncanny Valley, because when everything is like, when the movie looks like a nature documentary that could be narrated by Richard Attenborough, it looks fine. Like when the ants are running along, or, you know, like there are little moments that are like, oh, that's a nice little, or when Scar's trying to catch that mouse, you know, and the mouse is just kind of running. I was like, okay, this is like a nice little nature documentary style look. But it when they start talking, it's weird and grotesque, and I don't like it. My eyes don't like it. My brain doesn't like it. And the whole point of animation, a whole bunch of other people have made this point. I'm stealing from them. The whole point of animation is to create caricatures that emphasize features that highlight what is great and or bad about a certain creature, right? So like the animated Lion King, the lions have their big fluffy manes and they're, you know, they've got big expressive eyes, except for Scar, who has his narrow evil eyes, and like the whole thing looks better. It just makes more sense visually. And this whole photorealism thing, it just looks weird, and realism is not what we want from animation. It's just not what we want. Like, I don't like it. I don't want it.
For me, the thing was, I didn't think it was that big of a deal because they get the animals and then they just put voices to the animals, right? That's what they did. They go out in the wild. It's like you see these documentaries on Nat Geo where they just follow the animals around, and every time they open their mouth, then they just add dialogue. That's basically what
they had
they
to shoot
did.
A lot. The number of hours they had to shoot to get everything.
I mean,
like
some
this.
Interesting. How did they get?
It took
like,
12 years.
The trainers.
They took 12
I would give
years
an award
to shoot the Lion King.
Thank you. To wait for the right moment for them to do the weird things, and then they can say, "Hey, what's that smell?" or whatever. You know, that's interesting.
It's impressive.
Do you remember the first time we had mass culture animals talking
yes,
like that?
Remind me. I was thinking about this.
Beer commercial during the Super Bowl, I think, like 16 years ago or something, where all of a sudden, like, the jaws are moving on the llama or something.
And it's like, oh, this is good.
Do you remember this?
Yes.
And now we're making feature films that gross $192 million.
Based on the
them.
Same concept.
Sort of.
Okay. The one thing, my one piece of praise, the one thing I will say is that I think the design of the hyenas on this is much better because it makes them actually terrifying. Like hyenas are
scary.
Disgusting animals.
Yeah, it was perfect.
The way that they are scary and terrifying and grotesque in this movie is, I think, a better use of the photorealism than the cartoonish kind of funny version of them from the original cartoon.
Yes.
So I will say, I like when they're on the screen, like when all the hyena stuff is the best stuff in the movie by far. I would actually much rather watch a movie about the hyenas, frankly.
The hyenas are the real heroes.
Well, there is an interesting argument to be made about the nature of the story being told in Lion King, which is really a story about how filthy outsiders will destroy your homeland. But
that's
but
entirely
wow.
true.
I mean, it's literally wow, that's so, that's not even like that's not even subtext. That's
gonna,
the text of
they're
the
gonna
film.
Build a wall and the hyenas are gonna pay for it.
The text of the film is if you let these filthy outsiders into your yes. home, into the pride lands, they will destroy everything they touch.
Yes.
So I mean that is I like that again, not
all
subtext.
They do is eat and take.
Not subtext, just text.
That is exactly true.
You know, one of the lions actually wanted to offer the hyenas all free healthcare too.
You know, come in. What I don't, and this is thinking
yes,
too deeply about
JVL.
It, obviously. Why is it that the circle of life does not include the hyenas? Right. Why? If,
oh,
if
sure.
Everything
right.
is precious.
Right. 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 They're like on the outside
and we are
of the
all,
circle.
You know, we are all doing our own part, and we are all sort of
that's
we
right.
eat and be eaten.
Right to the tiny caterpillars.
Down to the tiny caterpillars.
It's pretty convenient for the lions. The circle of life,
isn't
it
though? Yeah. No. Hey, well, we just get to be the apex predators, then
right.
we die,
the top
and
of,
then we
yeah,
are melted
into
to
grass.
The ground. We turn into
melted
grass.
The
that's
really.
All. Wait a minute. Hold on a minute. Isn't this species? But the other my. I don't know. Are you trying to get to an ad read here?
No, it doesn't matter. I can add it. It can go anytime. So,
I have perpetually
thank
bothered
you for your concern.
By anthropomorphization of animals in film because there's always then some dividing line at which some animals are ensouled and some animals are just not. And in this, like, everybody's got feelings and is talking except for the insects. And the insects just get like, hey, it's funny that they're
oh,
eating
right,
and
they're
murdering
eating.
The insects, right?
They don't have...
Hey, here's this fat grub caterpillar. Oh,
right,
yeah.
Right,
somebody.
Right, right.
I'm like, wait a minute. I just saw the bee movie, and that insect has an whole entire interior life
right,
to it.
A bug's
it.
Life. Right. It's a bug's life, and he was about to become a butterfly.
The
no!
The Lion King from a perspective of a grub. It's just like 60 minutes of black... Mm-hmm. And then blinding light, and then you're dead.
So, but this is a thing which, as a kid, always did actually sort of bother me. The
don't they have like what? Yeah.
Well, once you start ensouling the animals, once you stop dividing the line between people and animals, then there is some other level of animal which you are othering, and which winds up as just food. You know,
right? Right.
And I don't know.
I would say Seth Rogen makes the movie. I think without him, it would be a lot less. But I hear this. What was that? Where did that noise come from? You or you?
That
which
was
one?
Between Seth Rogen.
I thought it was pretty good.
Seth Rogen and Billy Eichner. Seth Rogen is less annoying than Billy Eichner.
That
Billy
is,
Eichner.
No, yeah, I would have preferred Nathan Lane.
No, the best voice work in the movie.
Wasn't
again,
he the original?
The best voice work in the movie. Yeah, it was. Nathan Lane and...
Yeah, who was the other guy?
Was it...
Robin
was
Williams.
It, was it Matthew Broderick?
Oh.
I'll look it up.
Yeah.
You, really? You guys talk. I'll
look. Okay.
Anyway, the best voice work Robin Williams. In the... Yes. Hold on. I'm actually going to look it up. The best voice work in the movie is done by the hyenas. So once again...
I don't know her name.
Why isn't Peel there?
Well, so I actually thought it was Key and Peele, but it's Key and Andre. It's Key and Eric Andre.
Right.
And then
the lead hyena.
And then the lead hyena
she's great.
Is great, terrifying, and...
The whole thing, the teeth. It's perfect.
Just really, really well done. Shenzi, isn't that the head?
Oh, I thought it was Serafina, but maybe not. I get confused. I'm sorry.
Which character were you asking about from the original?
Timon and Pumbaa.
Ernie Sabella?
Oh.
Okay.
Was Matthew Broderick in the movie?
Broderick was Simba.
Oh.
And
really?
Robert Guillaume was in as Rafiki. The
oh,
great
yeah,
Robert
yeah, yeah,
Guillaume.
Of course. No, of course. I love him. Benson. I love Benson. Okay. So, you were saying.
Anyway, I was saying is that the hyena voices I thought were very good. The head hyena with the kind of... I don't the accent, whatever accent that is.
Yeah.
She was fantastic. So much better than Chiwetel Ejiofor's Scar, who just disappears on this. Jeremy Irons, his voice.
Oh, work, Jeremy Irons.
Jeremy Irons has a perfect voice, so it's maybe unfair to compare the two, you know, his Scar kind of has a whole life of his own, and
not as bad as Beyonce.
Beyonce delivers one of the worst line readings.
Oh, I thought it was okay.
She
was one hot lioness.
She's terrible.
How about
she's
the
flat.
Singing? The singing.
I am amazed that after what she did in Austin Powers 3, is that the Austin Powers movie she was in?
Three
where
gold
she
number.
Gives one of the worst performances ever allowed onto screen. That she was lying. Like, they must have thought, too. Well, you know, she'll be able to do it in a studio. I mean, we could just do take after take after take, and it doesn't cost us anything. She can't read lines. And it's
terrible.
Really, really bad.
It's really bad.
And Donald Glover's terrible, too. Now, he's saddled with a bad character, because Teenage Simba is kind of, like, annoying.
Yeah, Teenage Simba is awful. You know who else sounds bad? And this is heresy, but James Earl Jones. James Earl Jones sounds old.
Yes.
He sounded old and weak as Mufasa.
Well, it's weird because because we know James Earl Jones, we know, you know, generally how old he is. When you see that relationship, it's more like grandfather and grandson than it is father and son.
No, he sounds like the James Earl Jones of Patriot Games when the Admiral is sick
in the hospital.
That's what...
I mean, and look, James Earl Jones is old. I feel bad saying this, but his voice work here bears no resemblance to the voice work from the original.
But even you know what, and also
deep and timbrous.
I noticed the same thing in Rogue One when he speaks. Yeah. It's an older Darth Vader voice. So anyway,
our heroes get old.
They are.
The icy grip of death approaches all of us.
But I still liked it. I gave it an A.
What?
Of course you did.
Are you kidding?
It was enjoyable.
So here, I have a real question about
totally
this.
Enjoyable.
So my audience.
I'm not going to see it again. Once is fine. But.
I saw it pretty packed theater, middle of the day, tons of kids, and I don't know. So 200 people in there, 300 people in there. Stone silence the entire time.
Really?
It just did not play at all.
We got chuckles, but we also had, and this is at Courthouse, a very large drunk man sitting in the back, and he talked throughout the movie. This is supposed to be the best movie? And he repeated that 4 or 5 times. And then finally somebody said, be quiet. And then he said, you be quiet. And then all of a sudden there was a loud bang, and he had fallen off his chair.
And then eventually you laughed after you picked yourself up off the floor.
By a large drunk man, I was referring to me.
After you cinched your belt on your trench coat.
So, you know, that was...
I don't have to take this anymore.
This movie.
Where's my gout medicine?
Gotta take my prednisone.
Even the Beauty and the Beast callback, right? Which is the first time I think they've ever broken the wall.
When they're about to sing and they don't sing.
Yeah, the Be Our Guest, right? The joke.
Which, I'm sure that is not... That's definitely not the first time they've broken that wall. For instance,
Disney,
in Moana, when Maui is doing a shape-shifting thing, he shapeshifts into Sven.
I guess that's right.
Mm-hmm. But, like, I'm sure there are other examples.
No, but those are Easter eggs.
Easter eggs.
As opposed to this, which is a full-on, like, tease of the joke and then... And I thought, okay, so people are really going to react to that?
And they didn't.
Crickets.
My audience, so I saw it with probably half critics, half like non-critics at the Smithsonian IMAX, the Air and Space IMAX.
Was it a radio screening?
It was not a radio screening. It was a weird screening in that it was mostly critics and friends of critics, but it was like enough non-critics that there was a lot of reaction, is what I'm saying. There actually was a lot of laughing, and people enjoyed it. People seemed to really, really enjoy it. I don't know. I mean,
was Jon Favreau there?
Got an A from CinemaScore. I don't know. Okay. I mean, people seem to like this movie. I don't entirely get it.
It is both pedestrian and grandiose.
It's very. I thought the effects were amazing. I thought the effects
score
were amazing.
On what is essentially a very pedestrian
Hans Zimmer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Good. You mentioned this earlier about $20 sodas and such, right? Okay. So I took my kids. It was a 6 p.m. showing, meaning it doesn't start till 6:25. You don't get out till 8:30. We got 3 candies, okay? M&M's, Junior Mints, Nestle Crunch, the minis, plus 3 small waters. Guess how much that came to?
Did you have to pay for the waters? Did you get, like, the water bottles?
Yes.
$47.
Wait, hold on. So you got 3 small candies. I would guess that is $38.
$34.
Okay.
Close enough, though. Anyway, that was, I thought, way ridiculous, and I should have spent my money on something better like DoorDash. DoorDash connects you to all your favorite restaurants in your city. Ordering is easy. Just use the DoorDash app and choose what you want to eat, and your Dasher will bring it right to you wherever you are. Not only is that burger place you love on DoorDash already, but over 310,000 other amazing restaurants are too. DoorDash connects you with door-to-door delivery in over 3,300 cities in all 50 states across the United States and Canada. Order from your local go-tos or choose from your favorite chains like Chipotle, Wendy's, Chick-fil-A, the Cheesecake Factory. My kids love the Cheesecake Factory. Don't worry about dinner. Let dinner come to you with DoorDash. Right now, our listeners can get $5 off their first order or $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter promo code SUBBEACON. That's $5 off your first order when you download the DoorDash app from the App Store and enter promo code SUBBEACON. Again, that's promo code SUBBEACON for $5 off your first order from DoorDash. Okay. Now, how about that Top Gun trailer? I wanted to talk about it earlier, but guys, I don't know if you felt like it. So it came out. What did you think? Sonny, I saw you were tweeting about it.
What did you say? I'm not on Twitter.com.
I don't. I am doubtful that this has a huge audience in the year of our Lord 2020. I'm not entirely sure who is waiting for an unnecessary sequel to a movie that, while beloved kind of ironically, but also like kind of genuinely.
Ironically?
Who
loves it ironically?
The people who, well, I would say there's a subculture of people who ironically love the homoeroticism of the beach volleyball scenes, amongst other things. Tom Cruise is not the box office draw he once was when you take him out of Mission Impossible movies. The numbers are not there. I don't see how this movie tops, I don't know, 140, 150 domestic.
Total?
Yes, total.
Well,
yeah, it depends on the story.
Depends on if it's good.
Yeah, like, I don't good, know.
Depends on if it's
is good. Is the story like Goose's son becomes a pilot and then he wants to help him and sort of be a mentor to him?
I like the director. I like Joseph Kosinski. He did Tron Legacy and Oblivion, as well as Only the Brave. The movie has a lot going for it. That trailer is very good. In the sense that it basically promises a remake of the first film.
Boy, doesn't it. Vangelis. I believe they play volleyball in it.
Yeah, they do.
Do they
shirtless
not?
Vangelis?
Shirtless volleyball. Isn't Vangelis do part of the score?
Maybe. Yeah.
Not of the original.
Oh, yeah.
The original score is Vangelis.
No.
Chariots of Fire is Vangelis. I think it was Goldsmith. Jerry Goldsmith does the soundtrack for Brooke. Yeah, no. Goldsmith.
No, I'm sorry. It's all Harold Faltermeyer.
Oh, Harold Faltermeyer.
I knew Faltermeyer
as
did the main
Beverly
theme.
Hills Cop, Harold
I did not
Faltermeyer.
Know. He gets
F
credit
Faltermeyer.
With the entire,
thank you.
The entire
thank you.
Music
right.
by.
Correct. Self-correction. Yeah.
JVL. Victorino?
Oh, I thought it was great. It's a funny idea.
He flying an F-18?
He's an old F-18 Hornet. And then later on, maybe it was an F-14, but he's over the snowy mountains. Is that Iran? Who knows what the mission is? Why is he only a captain at 60, whatever, however old he is?
Why is he allowed to fly combat?
Why is he allowed? I want to know the story to that. Ed Harris wants to know too.
Here's the question: is Ed Harris a new character, or is he a replacement for? And I can't
the old
find
bald guy, the old bald guy,
the cool. actor of whose I cannot find his name.
God help us.
The principal from Back to the Future.
Yes, and the principal from Back to the Future. Can you think of another movie he was in? I can only think
Randall
of that.
Randall Brady, maybe?
Okay. No, I'm going to assume not. I'm going
to
assume Ed Harris is new.
Yeah,
I see John Hamm is in there. They say, I was reading the Variety write-up, Val Kilmer's supposed to be back. I assume he'll be an admiral.
Will he be fat
he'll be
Val
like a
Kilmer?
Fat, yeah, he'll be fat old admiral. Iceman.
Admiral Iceman.
Admiral Iceman. Like maybe that. Rick Rossovich is
I was going to ask you if Rick Rossovich. Because I got to say
Rossovich.
Rick Rossovich. A hidden gem in that
movie. Oh, yeah.
Movie.
Oh, here's another one. Michael Ironside. Did he die? Is he alive?
Ooh,
I think he died.
Let me look.
I think Ironside.
You mean
died.
In the
Viper.
Movie?
No. And
no,
Tom Skerritt.
Michael
I think
Ironside
Skerritt,
is Jester.
Yeah.
Jester.
Michael
Ironside.
Viper. Is still alive.
He's still 100% alive.
Yeah.
He's
69.
Still acting.
Okay, well, I hope he's there.
I love me Tom Michael Ironside.
Yeah, he's great.
I can't get enough of that guy.
But Sonny, you were talking about how you don't know if why would people want to see a Top Gun 2 movie?
Yeah,
people saw Iron Eagle 2. Similar.
People saw Incredibles 2. Right. I mean,
there's a real movie.
There. Look, okay. if there is a, it doesn't need to have a reason for being if it's a good story.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Right. If it is just a soft remake of it, then we don't need it.
Right. I tell you, who's not going to be in this movie? Obviously, Kelly
McGillis. Why?
It was in the news. I'm just saying, type her name in.
Oh, did you see that on the elevator?
No, no. The elevator has much more decency than that. The elevator has decency, but it was like, oh, here she is now at 62. She is a couple years older than Tom Cruise. That's all I'm going to say. She was terrible. It's, you know,
well,
what?
She didn't get the Dorian Gray painting like Tom Cruise did.
Let's see how you look at 62. Right.
How about now? Look how I look now. Okay.
Maybe she has gout.
Maybe she has suffered. Suffer from gout. Okay, fine. Any other top
thoughts? I'm just going to say that as a trailer, it hit me over the head, I would say, like too many times with echoes of the original. Mm-hmm. I could have done with just the music. Could have been nostalgia enough mm-hmm. for me mm-hmm.
and show less
I didn't need to see the volleyball scene. I didn't need to see it the karaoke
so,
scene.
It happened so fast that it almost looked like a flashback, but you're telling me that
I sure hope it's a flashback and not a recreated.
If it's a recreation, that would be terrible,
because if I'm that's say what's that happening would be and they're yeah, looking yeah, to hit the same can't like do beat it. For beat
no
that's
no.
not I really good. Not good not.
Unless but do it's ironic tongue-in-cheek.
Do we think Tom Cruise would do that? Because I would say his film selection has been pretty good.
Yeah.
I can't remember the last time he was in a movie that I looked at and thought, well, this is just preposterous. Why does this exist? This is a money grab. I don't think Cruise lives that way as a professional. Do you?
I think he is more inclined to do that now than he might have been in years past, as things like The Mummy have crashed and burned.
Well, it's like Robert De Niro in a way.
Well, that was Russell Crowe's fault.
Or the Jack Reacher series, which mm-hmm. flamed out, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. Okay. I would say that he is probably more in need of a big paycheck type movie than he used to be. Now, granted, he is a producer on the Mission Impossible movies. He probably is banking, you know, $50 or $60 million off each of mm-hmm. those, but still.
And he gives a lot to the church.
Sorry. He's got some tithing he needs to do.
Okay, good. Wow. There was a listeners wanted some talk about Cats. Sonny, you mentioned it earlier, or JVL.
I thought that was a trailer we were going to talk about.
Oh,
Cats.
Okay, Cats trailer. Yeah, well.
I watched it 100 times.
I'm what sure are you talking you did. About? There's a
trailer
Cats
for the
musical.
Cats movie coming
and Taylor
out.
Swift's in it. And somebody asked me about that.
It's coming out the same. It's coming out the same day as episode 9, I believe. Counter Program.
Well, there you go. Who knows which one I'll see? I'll just say this: I'm not going to address the trailer itself, but to the people who asked the question, the answer is yes. The answer is yes. Okay.
Wait, what was the? I'm totally in the dark. I need more.
It doesn't matter.
Taylor Swift is a cat.
Oh. Okay. Yeah.
Corrections.
Yeah. Okay.
Additions. You should really say it. Shout outs.
I got
anything?
None.
Nothing? Mm-hmm. I will say I had a big correction here. Thank you to everyone, because it seemed like everyone on Twitter reminded me that Shakedown, the song for Beverly Hills Cop 2, was Bob Seger, not Michael McDonald. Michael McDonald was Sweet Freedom
Idiot.
From the other buddy cop movie, Running Scared, with Billy Crystal. Remember that one? Billy Crystal and Gregory Hines.
Boy, my
Jimmy
brain
Smits.
Totally.
It's a great song, too.
Wow, that is weird. My brain just that is like the the Shazam. You know what I'm talking about.
Right, the fake movie with Sinbad
that nobody didn't actually happen. My brain put Kazam. That is my Kazam. Brain put that there. Okay, that's enough.
Okay, all right. That's all the time we are giving to this episode. Questions, comments, complaints, compliments. Tweet us at Victorina Mattis, at Sunny Bunch. Again, be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher. Just type in Subbeacon under podcasts. We're there. Leave a review. Tell your friends. Until next time. You got something, JVL? What do you got?
Not really. I had a bunch of substandard people. I'm sorry, Subbeacon people over at my house over the weekend.
A little meetup? And like Comic-Con?
And Victorino Mattis, too.
It was nice to see everybody.
It was nice to see everybody.
Meeting some people for the first time. 1967 Mustang Man, A.D. Lewis. I don't want to know if they wanted me to use their names. I'll go by Twitter handle, which is public. But it was very nice to meet them.
Yeah.
And
Tanya came with her husband and her 15-year-old daughter who listens to the show. A very nice Catholic 15-year-old girl who listens to the show. Victorino, how does that make you feel about yourself? Do you feel like you conduct yourself appropriately on this program?
Well, if she's listening, to clarify, what I meant was I love Taylor Swift's music, even as a cat.
I'm sure that's fine.